And now it's time for wait a minute. What the hell is the show called again?
It's Chatter on Books. What else do you want me to say? Can I go now?
That's right. It's Chatter on Books. Let's do this thing.
And welcome to the inaugural episode of Chatter on Books, the brainchild of the enormously talented and always lovely Tori Clark.
God bless you. Tori Clark here with Mark Stern, my partner in crime on this. Earlier, before we started the show, he started to say, you know, this is your show. And I go, no, this is our show.
Mark, that's a woman for you.
That's right. Mark is part of the, is very much
your
part
show.
Of the brainchild here. And we are joined this evening, happily, by Jeannie McManus, Jamie McIntyre, David Aldridge. And later we'll be joined by Mark Leibovich of the New York Times.
I'm just honored that I'm going to be the answer to a trivia question, which was, name the people who were on the inaugural
yes.
edition of the short-lived but
right.
exciting show.
It might be the inaugural and last edition of Chatter on Books.
Oh, no, we're here to stay.
Yeah.
We are here to stay. And just so when this is a podcast, so you might be listening to this, you know, on Wednesday at midnight, but we tape this show every Monday at Chatter, which is the restaurant on the corner of Wisconsin and Jennifer Streets, right in Friendship Heights, just on the... Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, hey, Chatter, round of applause. Excellent.
Yeah, people listening. Yeah, there's actual people listening to this.
There they are again.
There you go.
We open the window for the people. But we will be taping every Monday here at 5:30.
And hopefully a little bit later sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes a little bit later. We'll let you know about that.
Start drinking earlier.
Yes. I like to see the show prep that a lot of you guys undertook today.
Yeah. Jamie and I started at, what was that, 4:30? 4:45?
Well, it's the first show. You got to be
so
ready.
A Chardonnay soaked napkin.
You got to be ready.
Can't drink all day if you don't start drinking early.
So I just want to, this is an idea, Tori, that you've had for a long time. And
over
we talked
10 years.
About this, you know, on and off over the last few years. So but just tell the people sort of the genesis of the idea.
Over 10 years ago, I did a lot of talking head stuff for CNN, Once a Home with Jamie McIntyre. And back in the day, I was getting really tired of doing the talking head stuff for them. And the pay was going down and the questions were getting stupider. And I thought, I just can't, this is just too embarrassing. I can't keep doing this. And I talked to some nice people at CNN. I said, I have a couple ideas of really cool, wonderful shows. And I had two ideas. One, interestingly enough, was on race. And back then, over 10 years ago, they said, no, that's a bad idea. Like, oh, okay. And the other one was, let's do a story on books. And at the time, I said, talking about books and all the things that books are involved in doesn't have to be tragic, right? It doesn't have to be sad. It doesn't have to be slow. It doesn't have to be boring. And at the time, I said, let's steal from the formats of things like PTI. Let's steal from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and make it fun and fast-paced and be irreverent. And God bless them, at the time, they gave me a really good producer and they gave me some really good people, and we did a pilot. And it was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic. There's a small hitch in that the fellow who was working on it with me was asked to leave CNN at the time because of what we would now call a hashtag Me Too kind of situation.
Ooh. Oh,
hello.
Yeah.
So
there was a lot of that back then.
Yep, yeah, there's a lot of that. So that show went by the wayside, and just there's somewhere in my basement there was a VHS tape. Is that what we call them?
Betamax?
A VHS tape of it.
Yeah. Eight-track.
Yeah. And I kind of forgotten about it, but then being here at Chatter a lot in the mornings, happily on Tony's show, started thinking about, well, what else could we be doing? So this is the podcast version of that show. But I can't remember the name of it. That's killing me.
I think it was Chatter on Books.
I think it was. Genius. Yeah. Absolutely genius.
It reminds me a little bit of the book club we used to have when I was at NPR, where they would send an email out every a month saying what the book was. And then there was always some new employee who didn't know the inside joke, which was they would actually try to read the book.
What kind of books did they read at the NPR book club?
They would just pick random books that were related to something in the news. And as I said, somebody would always think, well, I have to read the book. It's like, no, that wasn't the point. The point
Big
was just
mistake.
To come talk.
Yeah.
About it.
And I have never, ever, ever belonged to a book club, and I doubt I ever will. And if I did, I'd get thrown out after the first week. But they seldom read the books.
Very seldom read books.
A bunch
together.
Of the people in the restaurant now are laughing.
And I think there's some book club people out there, too.
I think there are.
And some people of the book.
Like
there's people of the book out there?
Yes.
There's always some book club snob, by the way, that always says, you know, like, well, we have to do something about the club because some people are not reading the books,
right?
I have a friend who belongs to two book clubs.
Are you talking about yourself now?
No, it's not me. There's the book club.
A friend, we're making air quotes.
Well, I swear to God, it's not me. There's the book club, and then there's the book club. And for the book club, she had to be interviewed by the book club.
Oh my
and
God.
And passed like an oral test.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. In which she swore that she would come prepared and have read the book. For that, that's for the book club. But for the book club, no. They just get together and they drink and they talk about everything else.
Well, I had to take a test to come here. Didn't you guys have to?
A blood test. No. I passed. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, driving test.
DNA.
Yeah.
I think if we haven't made it really clear, we should, that this is not your mother's book club.
No.
It absolutely
no.
is not.
No, it's not.
Book choices were hideous.
And we take a very broad definition of books around here. So, for instance, I brought my yearbook.
Oh, God.
Yearbooks.
How about that?
Jeannie and I have talked about this a little bit. So yearbooks were big in the news a few weeks ago, thanks to Judge Kavanaugh.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? And
Justice
what was under
Kavanaugh.
His picture, I'm putting mm-hmm. Mark in a really uncomfortable position because I know you weren't in your yearbook.
I was not in my yearbook, no, because I was expelled.
Shuffled off. Expelled.
Yes. I was asked to leave early. Fine tradition in the Stern family.
Because they thought you had done so well, you were ready to go out there
exactly.
into the world,
no
and you didn't have
graduate.
To wait around.
Something like that.
Yeah, and
yes.
Jamie, you were.
I was
were
also not in my.
Exercised from your.
I was exams. Not in my yearbook because I showed up with a fake Fu Manchu mustache, and they took the picture. And then you know they had no sense of humor in the early 1970s.
Okay, David, do you remember what's under your picture?
Sadly,
in the yearbook?
I was in my yearbook. Good Lord, that picture is just so embarrassing.
But what was under your picture?
Oh, we just had names. There was
oh, you
no
didn't
like,
have
there
like,
wasn't like
you didn't have
you
like
know,
a senior page or anything
no,
like that.
There were no
God, no.
There were no senior superlatives like
no.
most likely
everybody
be found
hated
dead
me
in the back seat
everybody
of a
hated
Volkswagen.
Me my senior year because I was president of the senior class, and every year the senior class president was supposed to arrange a senior skip day where they all went out and got drunk,
right.
and I didn't do it.
We got work to do.
Why? Because you were out drunk that day?
Exactly. I forgot. I was hammered. And they never forgave me for that.
Jeannie, you had poetry or something
really dreadful. Yeah.
Are you sure you don't belong to a book club?
No, I don't. I swear to God. In my high school yearbook, I was the senior editor, so I had to write the quotes for everybody. Of course, except myself. And so we just dug deep into Bartlett's quotations and came up with Shakespeare, Wordsworth, whatever. But then it came time for somebody to write mine. In college, we did not have quotes. We just had, you know, what
right.
you had accomplished. And I can tell you exactly what was under
Go
my
ahead.
Picture. What has she got in that little brown head?
Ooh.
Wonderful thoughts that can never be said. It's from Winnie the Pooh.
Oh!
Well, it's worth a little bit.
I remember that. I mean, it's kind of sad. But wait,
if that's from Winnie the Pooh, and I read a lot of Winnie the Pooh as a child.
Didn't we all?
What was that in reference to?
I guess because they thought maybe that there was, like, stuff going on inside my head that they didn't know about, and probably they were right about that.
Oh my God.
That I was not sharing with others at the time.
All right, I'm going to
What's
share.
Under yours?
I'm going to let David just
God.
Give it a little look.
Hold on. I
this
need
under
my glasses
my pictures.
To read. Wait, where's
Sewickley
your picture?
Academy.
Oh, there she is.
Outside
PA?
Of Pittsburgh.
Yes. She is Tori Clark.
Yeah,
look at
Tori
her.
Tori Clark. Yeah.
Hockey, volleyball, yearbook, ski club. Wow, you are... Real
ski club. I don't, the only reason I joined bad. The ski club Yikes. Is because they were going on a trip to Canada. I wanted
Yikes.
To go to Canada. I didn't really ski.
No way, Jose. But, oh God, this is. I'm going to the barn. There's a story.
I'm taking a note.
There
on
are a couple
one.
Words in there that have Kavanaugh-like meaning.
Yes.
We'll see if you find them.
Party at Clark's.
That would be one.
Okay.
That would be one.
First Fichette.
I need to call a few friends and ask them about that. I really forget what that
first
was.
Fichette.
First
yeah.
Fichette.
Yeah.
Moon boots.
I wore some really cool boots.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. Perkins.
Did you think they were cool, or did everybody think they were cool?
Perkins patron or Perkins patron? I don't know.
It's often together.
It could
together.
Be both, right?
Sure.
Could be worse.
Mark
could be
low
rainy.
Volume. Get a request.
It's okay. Not like 100 kegs.
No.
Well, wait.
No.
Exactly.
But the word
okay.
Kegette is in there.
Kegette. Okay. Where is Kegette? Oh. Oh, no, that's not it.
I'm
Hold
sorry.
On.
I'm looking yeah. over your shoulder,
look over
and
my
I'm looking at these people. None of these look like Tori Clark.
This is her. Yeah, that's her with the hat on.
I need to see this.
Yeah.
She looks like her with the hat on.
No, so that's not Tori Clark. Where's the real Tori Clark?
There are two words that should jump out. One is Kegette.
Where is Kegette?
Really?
And we actually
Seriously?
Had a group of girls. There were six of us.
Oh, Kegette. Candy, there it is.
Candy, Alfie, Kelly, Mia, Lisa, Taryn, and Tori.
Uh-huh. Oh, those names.
And we were the Kegettes.
Was Squee part of this or
We
no?
actually, well, Squee should have been there. Actually, somewhere in the back of the book, there's an ad, because you were allowed to take out ads, and there's an ad of us as the Kegettes. And I am wearing my, so it was the school was Sewickley Academy, and I'm wearing my Sewickley Pour on the Iron Academy t-shirt.
Well, it's a damn good thing you weren't nominated to the
exactly.
Supreme Court.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I would have had to answer to all of those kinds
you
of things.
You have a quote here.
I do. It's pretty. It's pretty special, isn't it?
Everywhere around me, I see jealousy and mayhem because no men have all their peace of mind to carry them. I don't really care if it's wrong or if it's right, but until my ship comes in, I'll live night by night.
My parents were pretty happy
Steely
with that
Dan.
One.
Yeah,
they were really happy
Steely
with that.
Steely Dan.
They were very happy.
Oh, you got Shakespeare, you got Wordsworth, you got Steely Dan.
There's that book.
Yeah,
that you're
that's
now
the book.
Put away for my children never to see. Okay, I'm going to give you guys some handouts now.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Here's the quiz.
Take
handouts.
One, pass it down.
No.
Put your pens down.
It's a test, damn it.
I
put
hope
your pens down.
It was my understanding that there would be no math.
It kind of is multiple choice.
But it's still the greatest Saturday Night Live line of all time. I'm sorry. Because the camera keeps closing in on him. You know what I'm talking about with Chevy Chase? And he looks so befuddled as Jane Curtin's going on and on. And he's just, I'm sorry, I was told to be no math this debate. So great.
Okay, does anybody ever look at bestseller lists? Do they impact you at all?
Yeah.
You know they're a scam.
I look at them, but they do not impact me.
How do you manipulate them? Is that through PR?
No, Mary Madeline just went on a rampage. I was talking to her a couple weeks ago, and she's going to be on the show someday, and she just went through the roof when I was talking about bestseller lists. She goes, it's a scam. People rig them, you know, all these kinds of things.
I think what you do is, don't they have clearinghouses that buy like a million copies of something and then they just give them out for free so that you can say you have a bestseller?
Yeah, yeah.
Can we do that for Simon the Sea Cat?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Be on it. The upcoming bestseller.
The reprinting of Pumping Irony.
I'm back for more cash.
Bald as I want to be. So great.
We could get all the neighborhood cat people in. Okay, I'm starting with fiction here. Okay, The Reckoning, which is number one. It just made it to the top of the list. John Grisham. I will read anything by John Grisham.
Yes.
I've read everything by John Grisham. And if he wrote the phone book over, I would actually...
If I'm on an airplane or in a hospital waiting room, John Grisham is my go-to guy.
That's the one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This one, I read it and I listened to it, as a matter of fact, and I liked it. Didn't love it as much as I've loved some of them. Have you guys ever read or heard about a John Grisham book called Playing for Pizza?
Oh, yes.
I read that.
Oh, my son's read that many times. It's a favorite of his.
Why is that not a movie? For the six people listening, Playing for Pizza was a wonderful John Grisham book he wrote in maybe 2006, 2007.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I pulled that off the free bookshelf at NPR.
Stop.
I did. They have at NPR, they're full of free books that come in, and I just pulled it off the shelf. It was great.
He wrote it as a favor for his, or as a tribute to his publisher or his editor, mm-hmm. or something like that, who loved Italy and loved this. And he wrote it for him. It's the most wonderful story about a washed-up American quarterback, right,
mm-hmm.
David?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who can't make it here, so he goes to Italy, and he falls in love with the food, and he falls in love with an Italian woman.
Right.
I cannot,
what's not to love?
Right? I cannot figure out why it is not a movie.
It will be.
Who would play...
After this
who would
podcast,
play the quarterback?
It will be
Kevin,
a movie.
Kevin Costner.
Hollywood is calling now.
Plays every sports player person. Kevin Costner.
It was just great.
Okay, I'm picturing Tim Tebow in his acting.
There you
review.
Go.
Number three weeks on the list, Mitch Albom, the next person you meet in heaven. Mitch, fan of the and friend of the Tony Kornheiser show.
That's right. Was on the show, I think about a month ago, maybe two or three weeks ago, to talk about the book.
Right.
Yeah.
What did he say about it? I missed that show.
It was a great conversation. I would commend people to go back and listen to that particular episode. There was a lot of fun stuff in that.
But it was not about the fun stuff. Was not about the book. It was about other stuff.
Well, it was about other stuff. It's a fun show, but it's a good read.
But just to be clear, this is based on a true story, right?
Which one?
The next person you meet in heaven.
No.
Yeah. Which is why there's no relevance for me, because I am never going to be there anytime soon. And then I jumped down to 4 weeks on the list, number five, A Spark of Light. Let me just read this. The live of patients, doctors, and activists intersect when a gunman holds them all hostage in a women's health center in Mississippi.
I read the review of that in
this
the Post.
This just seems too close to reality for me these days.
For some reason, I do not read like book reviews in the Post book review section or the Times. I don't read them normally. For some reason, I actually did read the review of that book, and they thought it was very, very good.
Wow. Would you ever read it? It looks a little chickish.
I might.
Yes, it is
Jeannie,
chickish.
Would you read it?
No.
I definitely would read...
Mark, we can use the word chickish on the show, right?
You guys can.
Swear
I'm not
words,
sure I can.
We can say chickish.
I would definitely add it to the 2-foot stack high of books I have by my bed that I'm planning to read any day now.
Next on my list.
Which books do you have stacked up next to you? I know we got Todd coming up, right?
Yeah, Todd's on the line, so we'll get to him in just a second.
Okay, jump to the next page, the nonfiction.
Yes.
Because there's one I really, really want to talk about.
Okay.
I do not want to talk about Bill O'Reilly.
No?
Yeah.
Or Tucker. You don't want to talk about Tucker?
Mm. Bill O'Reilly said today that cable news is going to die if Trump goes away because there'd be, no one will watch after Trump. He actually said this today in an interview.
From your mouth to God's ear, sir.
Yeah. Mark, talk to us about Tucker's book.
I have not read it yet, but I know that Tucker is a controversial figure. I am in Tucker's camp because I have known him for 40 years.
He's and he's been a good friend.
He's been an outstanding friend. I recognize that he's not everybody's favorite person, but I adore him. Okay. He's a very, very good friend.
All right, I'm going to jump down to number 7, Shade by Pete Souza.
Ah, yes.
And I brought his book with me, which I have, because visuals, I think, are so good for podcasts, don't you?
Yes,
right?
They work exceptionally well, yeah. I've been told.
White House photographer who grew up in the era of White House photographers when you were part of the wallpaper. You took great photos, but you're never seen or heard from. Then he became President Obama's photographer, did spectacular stuff. And it's a really, this is a great holiday gift kind of book. It's a great thing where he takes an actual tweet from President Trump or an article about President Trump, and then he juxtaposes it with a photo he took during the President Obama administration that just runs completely counter.
Ooh,
and
I like
it's
that.
Really, it's really, really interesting. It's interesting if you care about photography, which I do deeply. It's interesting if you care about politics. But my favorite is on this space where he has Trump tweeting on February 27th, 2018, Witch Hunt, all caps, exclamation points. And by the way, Donald Trump has given witch hunts a really bad name because he's just overused it.
The people in Salem are really upset about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Right.
It's
and then
our thing.
The facing page is a spectacular photo of little kids showing up on the steps of the White House to trick-or-treat with President Obama. As witches. High five in the president. It's a terrific book. Okay, we are now...
Yes, our first guest.
Mark, tell me how this works. Do you play the music and then we bring Todd in, or how do
we
do
that's
this?
Right. We do have special music.
Uh-oh.
So I'm just
going to
start playing the music, and I think Todd is Todd, are you with us?
I'm with you.
All right, this is your
Hang
intro
in
song, as requested by Miss Tori Clark.
It ain't too early and it ain't too late.
Starting as a farmer with a brand new wife.
Soon be living in a brand new state.
Brand new state. Gonna treat you great.
Yes, of course, this is Oklahoma from the Rodgers and Hammerstein production. Cattle. Oklahoma. This is the...
As you do.
Yes, and the closest I ever came to actually seeing this was when I saw When Harry Met Sally and Billy Crystal was singing this in one of the scenes.
Two steps removed.
But this replaced this state, so this is your critical commentary, this is the official state song of Oklahoma, replacing a less well-known song called Oklahoma, A Toast.
There you
so
go.
I think they've upgraded. Yeah.
And people, the four people now listening to this podcast, may wonder why we're playing that to play in Todd Purdom, formerly of the New York Times, currently the chief political everything at Vanity Fair. Right, Todd?
No, it's
summer
at the Atlantic Tour. I'm a
staffer
at the Atlantic since July.
Oh, there you go. We got
it. Your phone was great a second ago.
Try it again. Now you sound like you're swimming.
Can
pool.
Can you hear me?
Yes, now we can.
Now you are awesome. Don't move a muscle in the next 17 minutes.
So, Todd, you're at the Atlantic. You'll have to work hard now.
I do. It's very fun. Jeff Goldberg is a taskmaster, but it's a great place to work, and I'm very excited to be part of the first ever LA correspondent in 161 years of the magazine.
There you go. Well, you've got no shoulders to stand upon, so you can make it all your own. So, Todd, lots of people listening to this actually know Todd Purdom very well, been around for a long time, great political writer at the New York Times, written a couple of terrific books. One on the Civil Rights Act, which I did read some time ago, called A Time Has Come. And the reason we played Oklahoma is because you did write probably the seminal work on Rodgers and Hammerstein. Should I call it that?
Well, you're very kind.
Yeah, something wonderful.
There's a lot of books written about that, but I've certainly written the latest one. Let me put it that way.
What inspired you to write a book about Rodgers and Hammerstein?
Well, you know, I owed my publisher the right of first refusal on another book after the Civil Rights book, and my wife, your friend, Dee Dee Myers, suggested, why don't you write about what you really always cared about, which is musical theater and Rodgers and Hammerstein. And it's the songs I grew up on, the songs my parents played when my sister and brother and I were growing up. And I've always been a fan of them. And sometime in my time at the New York Times, I was actually able to moonlight a little bit and cover cultural topics. And the publishers fell for the idea. And it was my good fortune. So I didn't devise it as a break from politics, but it turned out to be a good time to have something to think about besides politics.
Hey, Todd, your phone keeps cutting out. What I'm going to do is I'm going to mute my mic and I'm going to call you back on that landline. Is that okay?
Yes, I'm standing right here. Sorry.
All right. All right.
No worries.
Talk amongst
love
ourselves.
Technology. Yes. Talk among yourselves. Show tunes. Love them. Hate them.
I love show. I have often said this, that when the best job I ever had in my life was being an usher at the National Theater in Washington, D.C. for 3 years.
I know a lot about you, David. I did not know that.
I knew mm-hmm. that. Yep.
And wow. As I'm fond of saying, no straight man has seen cats more than I have. So I love musical theater. I love it.
Well, when I flunked out of community college, I spent the next couple of months in 52 performances of West Side Story.
There you go.
Oh.
As one of the Jets in a small dinner theater production that was at the Marriott Twin Bridges
there
Hotel.
You go.
You have to
there
be rather old to remember
since
the Marriott Twin
Bridges. Down.
I remember
yeah,
that.
It's gone.
Yeah. I remember
were
that.
You action?
I was Big Deal.
Big Deal. One of the lesser known Jets.
Exactly. And the cast was so small that they gave me lines from some of the other Jets, so because we didn't have enough Jets to go around.
Do you like that L.L. Bean ad that rips off on the Jets?
Oh. It was great because you could like take the girls up, I mean the women up, and like you could have to toss them around. And
yeah, I can't do that anymore, Jamie.
No. It was great.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
a lot of fun.
We have Todd back.
Todd,
yes.
can
right.
we hear you?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, there you go.
You go.
Excellent. All right, we did a lot of show tune stuff while you were gone. Thanks for coming back. Okay, so Todd, tomorrow.
Yes.
Put every. I can't listen to the radio anymore. I can't watch any TV because everyone is in just a high state of drama about the midterm elections tomorrow. Saying it's
is that
best.
Tomorrow?
Well, it depends on when you're listening to it.
That's
here
true.
In Southern California, so the TV, we're getting waves of ads. Our son is eager for the election to be over just to stop the ads.
Yeah, in the last week, I've been in several different places, including Kentucky and Michigan, and there was nothing better than being in. Because in D.C., you don't get much advertising.
Yeah.
So those, and the ads people
vote.
Run, the things they say right. about each other, hates children, kills small puppies. It's just remarkable. So, but put it in context for us. Put it in context. How important is it, whichever way it goes? And I think most people assume Democrats probably take control of the House, maybe not as decisively as they thought. But put it in context for us. What's the importance of tomorrow's elections?
Well, I think it's important because it's the first time that there's been a nationwide opportunity, basically a nationwide referendum on President Trump in the 2 years since he's been in office. And so whether the Republicans retain control of the House, in which case there'll be no check on President Trump, or the Democrats regain control, in which case for the first time there would be a branch of government that would be inclined to, you know, hold him to account, maybe subpoena him, et cetera, it's going to be a consequential election. And the truth is, Tori, in these last, 10 years or so, the midterms have produced swings in our politics, bouncing back and forth in a way that we really haven't seen since the period after World War II, when Congress changed hands multiple times in a short period. So we're a closely divided country. We're really a 51-49 kind of country, just the way the Senate is right now. And so I think, you know, it's important whatever happens, but it's definitely one of these moments where we're in a period, our politics are closely divided, and we tend to lurch back and forth.
Yeah.
Could you imagine somebody more different from Barack Obama than Donald Trump? I mean, you know, it's complete opposite.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I was saying to my husband this morning, it is a referendum on Trump. And he himself, right, said, think about this as though I'm on the ballot, right? He's dared people. Mm-hmm. And I just said, way back when Donald Trump first started to run for president and he was running against 16 others in the Republican primary and everybody was laughing, I kept saying to everybody, my Republican friends, don't underestimate him, don't underestimate him, right? Don't underestimate this guy. Then he gets the nomination. I said to my Democratic husband and all my Democratic friends, don't underestimate this guy, right? You can never underestimate this guy. And I don't think you can underestimate the potential power of these rallies he's been doing.
No, I don't either. And I think that the Democrats were already at 99% energizing, before the Kavanaugh hearings happened. The Kavanaugh, the caravan, you know, all these issues that Donald Trump has raised in the 11th hour, I think are having an energizing effect. I continue to believe that there are people who support Trump who are hard to find, hard to measure. The enthusiasm of them does not always get captured in the polls. I think we saw that in 2016. And I think there are probably people who are reluctant to tell strangers that they're supporting Donald Trump. So I don't know. I've hung up all prognosticating cleats since Donald Trump became president because he's upended all the conventional physics of politics. Any standard measurement that you think would suggest what's going to happen, I'm not sure is relevant in this day and age.
I think we know that some voters are being undercounted. The problem is we don't know which ones
right.
are
correct.
Being
right.
undercounted.
I think that's right, Jane. I think that's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, absolutely right. And polling. I feel like I should deliver this public service message every single day, right? Mm-hmm. People just get obsessed about these polls. Name one person any one of us knows who has talked to a pollster in the last 15 years.
Okay,
do you ever? You have?
Yeah.
Do you do it just to mess with them, Jamie?
No, they call all the time.
So you actually
really?
Talk to
because
them?
Because we have a landline.
You have a landline.
Why
right.
do you answer right. your landline? No one answers their landlines.
I usually answer it like this. Hello. And then they're
welcome to Movie Phone.
And
that's
then right. I usually say, I'm sorry, I didn't get that. And they're completely flummoxed.
That is great. All right, Todd, now is your time. So this show is ostensibly about books, and we really hope that people hear things and go, wow, I haven't read that. I want to read it. If somebody's going to a deserted island, and they're going to be there for the rest of their lives, and they can only take one book on politics, what's the one book they should take, in your opinion?
Well, when you asked me this the other day, I thought, could I really say one? So I have three answers. I sound like a politician. But
no, I love it.
Fiction is All the King's Men, I would say.
Yes, oh, I agree.
Nonfiction is Richard Ben Cramer's What It Takes.
Oh, that's
a remarkable,
you took my book, sir.
It's a cliche answer. But I think the best song ever written about politics is The Room Where It Happens from Hamilton.
Yes.
So much about the motivations of politicians and what drives people. And one of the things that drives them is when they're not in the center of the action and they've got to be there. And I think that the message of that song is so dead on.
God bless Todd Purdom for taking a stupid question and taking it to really great
wow.
levels. So,
now,
David, that was your book? That was your favorite book ever on politics?
Yes.
Because?
Because I always wondered, and he said this was why he was writing it in the beginning, what on earth would motivate somebody to do this? Seriously. What kind of chutzpah do you have to have to
right.
think you can actually handle this job?
Yep.
You think you're actually the person that should be running the political arm of this country?
Yeah. Favorite book ever? Jamie's looking at his phone, which means he had somebody smart like his wife.
No, I wanted to make sure I get the title right. So it's
you're really familiar with it.
The Age of Anxiety. No, I read this book. It's a great book. The Age of Anxiety by Haynes Johnson. It's about Joseph McCarthy.
Yeah. Okay.
And one of the things, so a friend of mine recommended it to me, and I thought, well, you know, I know about McCarthy. I don't really need to read this.
Right.
And the things that you discover on it, it's amazing. And of course, that goes without saying, it has some great parallels to today.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeannie?
Wow.
Well, I'm with Todd about All the King's Men, first of all, because it's Robert Penn Warren, and it is a beautifully written book. It won the Pulitzer Prize. But the book that I'm reading right now is, it's almost like a little handbook called On Tyranny by Timothy Snyder. And, I mean, if you're thinking very dark thoughts, as I am, about the current climate in
yes.
the United States of America, this is the book for you to read.
Okay.
It really is a call to arms.
Is it really little? Because I need little
yes.
words and big pictures.
You can put it.
It's like a bus schedule.
Yeah. You could okay. put it in your back pocket
okay.
if you had a big, wide
Thomas
back.
Paine could have written this.
There you go.
Yeah.
Mark?
Yeah.
There's a book I go to in times of political difficulties as we have right now, and it's called Tintin, the Crab with the Golden
yeah,
Claws.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it really speaks to our time.
Sort of juvenile, isn't it?
I would say any Cairo book on LBJ.
Yes, they're all terrific.
The
sure.
most phenomenal books terrific. Ever. And his freakish, slavish attention to detail.
Yes.
One time I was reading one of those books, and he referred to a Johnson trip to Culpeper, Virginia, right? Not, you know, 50, 60 miles from here. I know Culpeper well.
Yeah.
The 540.
And I know that Culpeper is spelled C-U-L-P-E-P-E-R,
right.
single P, right? And it was stunning because he had it correct. And I looked up how and why he knew that. It was actually the spelling of the town has changed a few times. But the era in which Johnson was there, he spelled it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Just phenomenal. And he was one of the few people I ever thought really got inside the office of LBJ, and you felt like you were there.
So I interviewed Robert Caro in 2001,
wow.
a couple of months before the September 11th attacks, because we were doing a story at CNN about Lyndon Johnson's Silver Star, the least deserved Silver Star. And you may know, you ever see a picture of Johnson, he has the Silver Star lapel pin. It's in his official photo.
Wow.
He's wearing it on the plane when he's sworn in after the Kennedy assassination. We'd have to do a whole other show, but let me just tell you that he did nothing to deserve the Silver Star. It was handed to him.
He took a plane ride.
Yeah, he took a plane ride. That was about it.
When I was really, really little, and all I wanted to do was have horses and ride horses, and I didn't. And I really didn't understand what the President of the United States was, but this guy wore a cowboy hat. And my life was cowboys and Indians, right? And I thought, cowboy hat, got to be cool. So I liked him. And then at some stage of the game, there was a now infamous photo of him holding up a beagle by its ears.
Yes.
Yes.
That was it. I was done.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, not my cowboy. Okay. Todd, we love you. Hugs to the family. Thank you for joining us. And when you're in town,
you,
you've got
to luck to everyone.
You've got to come in here and sit here with us and have
sure.
a drink.
Yes, please.
And we'd love to talk about it.
I have reason to be in Washington now since my business is headquartered there, so I'll look forward to it.
Excellent. Thanks, Todd.
Take care. Guys. Thanks.
Great. I just have to say, this is the most consequential election since the last most consequential
That's
election.
Right. Yeah.
Definitely.
That's right.
What's going to break my heart is if turnout isn't what we hope it is.
Oh, it's
got to be.
Well,
just from the early voting.
Yeah.
Well, unless everybody early voted and they're like you, they all have plans for tomorrow.
Yeah, it may just all be a matter of convenience.
I'm going to be under the bed tomorrow. That's why I voted early.
It may just be a matter of convenience. So, Mark, can we just roll right along?
Yes. Sorry if I'm grimacing. Yeah. It's because I won't go on this rant right now.
Go ahead.
But is anybody else here other than David and I a resident of the District of Columbia?
Oh,
not
Columbia.
Anymore.
Yeah. See,
wait,
the
Mark?
Midterm.
Mark
yeah. has arrived.
See, this election means nothing. Midterms mean nothing to us. I joked about it before. I've got an advisory neighborhood committee member. It's the big
That's
race
important.
In Ward 3. No, it's not important.
Because they get in there on those
Here's
issues
the deal.
Like rats in the
Give
dumpsters.
Us congressmen, give us senators, or we don't have to pay federal taxes. That's all I'm going to say.
They should put that on the license tag. Oh, never mind.
It's really
anyway,
long.
Sorry. It just because you're just inundated everywhere you go. No. It's so important to vote. And yes, if you live anywhere other than the District of Columbia,
right.
it's important to vote. Go out and vote.
If
live in D.C.
If you didn't have to pay income tax, it'd be worth it.
I would love that. We'd be fine with that.
Yeah, I'd stick around for that.
Okay. I just got this alert on my Apple Watch. You have an Apple Watch.
I do.
Go out and vote.
Huge early voting turnout. 31 million people have voted in the midterms, up from 22 million in the early votes in 2014.
Okay,
how about
again,
that?
I hope that's for all the good reasons, but is it just because people want to get something out of the way? Right? We'll
Could
see.
Be.
Okay.
So now, our first in-studio guest. This is very exciting.
It is. He looks really excited, doesn't he?
Thrilled to be here.
Yes.
Wait.
Yeah, you have to talk.
Should I talk?
Mark Leibovitz, yeah, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I don't know how this is supposed to work. I've never done this before.
How?
Has anyone?
No,
how we
not
doing?
Really.
How's
this
all
is
going
the first time we're using the equipment.
How this is supposed to work is, can we get you something to drink first and foremost? That's the most important.
Yeah, that's what, buried the lead.
We've got beers, we got wines, we got whatever you want.
It's like television.
Johnny Walker Blue for you.
The great thing is?
That would be good. No, how about just a light beer? From Miller Lite.
We can do that.
Remember Miller Family.
And the great thing is, the bar can hear us right now. Can we get a light? Can we get a Miller Lite up here, please?
Well, in that case,
and another Blue
Lite,
David.
Get me some wine.
Okay. What color?
What do you want?
Red.
Red wine for David.
Red Shiraz.
Some red grape juice. Yes, there you go.
Jeannie, you're okay?
Yeah, I'm a former bartender. I could go out there.
I was too. There are so many reasons we love each other. Okay.
Wait. How come Jeannie and I, like, do we have to, like, share the microphone?
It's like Paul and George, you know? Just sing a duet right there.
Part of the karma.
So we are joined by Mark Leibovitz.
We know each other.
We do. We used to work together.
Yeah. I know. And he's in awe of many famous people from the Post, like Jeannie and David and Tony Kornheiser and others, right?
Let me just tell you this about Mark. The sports section was next to investigative, where Mark worked. There had been many other departments that had come and gone because they could not tolerate being next to sports.
Yes.
But investigative came in, and they were with us.
Right at home.
Mark was with us. Kate Boo was with us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I always felt much more at home with sports people than any other kind of people, and that's true to this day. Which is why I left covering politics to cover football for a year.
Yeah.
So,
And we'll get to that.
So it
is for the now, we're down to three people listening to the podcast.
That's right, because you fired Mark in the break.
Mark, as many of you know.
Not you, the other Mark.
Chief National Correspondent for the magazine, correct? New York Times Magazine, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Written several books. I've only been able to read two of them, Mark. This Town and the current one. This Town, which Lloyd Grove, anybody, you love Lloyd Grove, you hate Lloyd Grove, right? Mary Madeline used to say that she hated talking to Lloyd Grove because if he wrote something, he would point out that she had dirt under her fingernails, right? He just kind of doesn't miss things. But he called your book This Town, which was about this town and politics, literary crack. Right? Isn't that what he called it?
Yeah.
Which is a great review, right? For political hacks.
Sure.
That's a good thing, right?
Absolutely.
So you decide to take a break from politics. It turned out kind of not to be, but you decide to take a break from politics and write Big Game, The NFL in Dangerous Time, which is an amazing book, which I've read and I listened to.
Both?
And it is, yeah.
Oh, wait, why'd you do both? Isn't that kind of redundant?
I spend a lot. It's actually a very different experience. And some books are really good to listen to and some aren't, but I spend a lot of time in my car. So, right.
Did you record the audio?
I didn't.
How did you? Well, okay, we'll come back to the book, but let's dial it back. Start with you.
Yeah.
You're a little kid. You played Pop Warner football.
I did.
Right? Was that your dream? Did you think you were going
to
play in the NFL?
To play Pop Warner football? Because I achieved that dream.
Did you think it was the path to the NFL?
No, I never did. I thought I wanted to be a baseball player. I really, really did. I remember actually saying to the summer day camp counselor that I actually thought I was good enough. Because when I was 8, I was really good.
Were you big? I'm guessing you were kind of
really
a big
kid. I was really big, yeah. And I was like 5'8" when I was 14, and I'm 5'9" when I'm whatever age I am now, 53. So, yeah, if I live for another half century, which is unlikely, I could make it to 5'4".
Yeah.
You know, given that how it sort of works, like you know, peaks and valleys. But no, so yeah, no, it's great to be here. This is like even though this is the
first ever
thing like this.
What
my beer is here. Yeah. It feels like the legend proceeds.
Jamie, what did you want?
Just give me one of those.
Whatever Jeannie's having.
Yeah, whatever.
It's very good, too.
Mark, running the board, producing the show, and bartending. Okay, but what did you want to be when you were 5? You wanted to be a baseball player?
I didn't know when I wanted to be, when I was 5?
Yeah. I wanted to be a cowboy or an Indian, thus
you
the
know
Linden
what? I postponed it. I mean, I would say that, yeah, I wanted to be a baseball player. Uh-huh. I thought, you know, sure, I'll be a baseball player. It looks
kind
of fun.
Why not?
I mean, yeah, I got to pick a career.
Everybody can play
right?
shortstop for the Yankees. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, and I was good, and I did really well in Little League. I peaked in Little League. I peaked in Pop Warner. And then I got to college, and that just became a challenge.
University of Michigan.
Go
just
Blue.
There this weekend. Watch them
really?
Kill Penn State.
What were you doing
there?
There's
nothing better. Well, our youngest son goes there, right?
Oh, fantastic. What a great game.
It's great to watch your kid's team win. It is great to watch your team kill Penn State.
Absolutely.
Not just beat them.
Wait,
just,
did your kid actually play?
No. No, but one of his roommates, because we are all about just reflected glory around here.
Yeah.
One of his roommates is the backup kicker.
Really?
Absolutely lovely young man named Alan Seltzer. Absolutely lovely, lovely guy. And we get some really, really good stories about the team. And not that the team ever goes to bars on Saturday night to drink, because they wouldn't do that. But if they were to go to a bar to have a seltzer water or something like that, they never have to stand in line.
No, bet not.
You know, that's the job I would want, backup kicker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a backup kicker story, believe it or not.
Go ahead.
So actually, this absolutely happened, I swear to God. I was covering Arizona versus Arizona State football game for TBS.
Big game.
It's one of the two college football games I've ever covered in my life. For some reason, we had the package back then. So Arizona State drives down the field. Their kicker makes a 52-yard field goal at the gun to win the game. And if you know anything about college football, you know, number one, each team has 90 players on it.
Right.
So the producer is in my ear, and what do you think he's asking me to do? Get the kicker.
Find the kicker. Yeah.
Get the kicker.
Find the kicker.
Get him now.
Get
him
now.
Get the kicker.
Find the skinny guy.
So I run, and I look at my sheet, and it says the kicker's number is 3, and I'm like, great. And I run up, and I grab number 3, and I say, hey, you got to talk to me. He says, no, dude, you don't want me. And I said, of course I want you. Come on, camera, come on over.
Don't be shy.
Says, dude, no, really, you don't want me. I'm not that guy. And I said, what do you mean you're not that guy? I said, we're both wearing number 3. You want the other number 3. I'm the backup kicker.
Because in college, multiple players can have the same number.
All have the same number.
Because that's not confusing.
I didn't know that. I've already learned something.
It's crazy.
Amazing.
It's utterly insane.
True. It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's so crazy.
When he says he's, I'm not that guy. No, you are the guy. You just made the kick.
Just made the kick.
No.
Don't say that to me. I need you to talk to you.
That is great.
I'm sorry to interrupt your radio.
No, no, that's good.
Yeah, we got to get this thing back on track.
Yeah, by the way, does anybody want a dessert menu or anything like that?
Yeah, snacks.
I'll have the creme brulee. Can you bring the torch out?
Of course,
really
we torch it right in front of you. That's the way we do it.
I could go on for 5 minutes about creme brulee, but I won't. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Mark, you decide you're not going to play shortstop for the Yankees. How'd you get into journalism?
Red Sox.
Red Sox
I decided
fan?
I wasn't.
Red Sox.
Yeah, I'm a red. I'm a terrible Red Sox. Yeah, look, I'm sorry.
Now you're going to be invited back.
I know everyone's sick of us. You all hate us.
Hey,
we're the worst
pretty
fans.
Pretty much. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Patriots even worse. I was born with the disease.
Like, what we need is one more reminder that there's no justice in the world.
None.
No, this is justice.
No,
Red Sox, we're the forces of good.
You know what? Here's the thing. There is the key, Mark. You got to be self-deprecating because they hate us so much.
Oh, trust me. I know.
I seriously, I out myself as one of these. really annoying. Actually, I'm not that annoying. I'm one of the good ones. I'm self-deprecating. I'm really gracious and everything, like all New Englanders. So I sort of went out, and like you want people to buy your book and like you, so you got to sort of lie and pretend you're gracious. No, but I am fully aware of why people hate us.
Yeah,
and it's not
it.
Just like, oh, they're jealous. And no.
There's a lot of hate.
We have a lot of crosses to bear.
Yeah,
but a lot of it is, I mean, people didn't hate
but
Steelers.
No, I'm in that foxhole with you.
Good.
And I think you both wish people hated you that much. It's not like hated the Yankees, who had decades and decades and decades of winning.
Did you see what the New York
you
papers did?
You guys have won a few things. You have not won as many Super Bowls as Pittsburgh, by the way. You've won a few things, and you almost want to wear this mantle if everybody hates us. No, we don't. We don't think about you that much.
Actually, we do.
No, you know what?
Did you see the New York papers after the Red Sox won? This is the New York papers. This was the headlines. They didn't say Red Sox win. It said 18 to go till you catch the Yankees.
Yeah.
Nice try, Sparky.
Yeah. Let's keep it in perspective.
As a Washington fan, and Tony and I sometimes describe this city as Loserville, in my heart, I don't hate Boston fans. I just wonder what it's like to be a Boston fan. I just can't imagine.
We had it for a minute there in June.
That's why you have to become a Cubs fan.
Sort of, kind of.
I have to say.
Point of information.
Sure.
of information.
Oh, yeah, go
on. Are we ever going to talk about Mark's book?
No. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Because
I, for one, would like to hear about it.
All right. Okay, and I'll tell one story. Then we can talk about Mark and his book, and I'll hold it up. So years ago, Mary Madeline, God bless her, used to have this wonderful cable show on CNBC, of all places, called Equal Time.
Mm-hmm.
And she always had a Democratic co-host, and shockingly, she kept losing her Democratic co-host. So she would have me come in and fill in, right, sub. And we had a great time. We had such a great time, and we were so good together that the head of CNBC called me up and said, you know, if you became a Democrat, we could make this show work really well. But anyhow, we often had authors on because we loved authors, and we could decide in the first 30 seconds, right, if we liked the person or not. And if we liked them, and God help me, she and I were both pregnant for much of this, right? And we would sit there in these dreadful plaid dresses, and if we liked the author, then we would sit with the book on our tummies and hold it up the whole time during the half-hour show.
A little extra
so
press.
Everyone would see the book. Right? And if we didn't like the author, it went face down. It was never seen on the show.
Well, I've been here more than 30 seconds. Come on. How am I doing?
There's so many visual aspects
it up
to a podcast.
Wait, this isn't like a circuitous way for you telling us that you're pregnant, are you?
That would be awesome.
If so, we have some big news.
We have really big news.
Ryan?
That would be more amazing than turning into a Democrat.
There you go.
Okay, so let's talk about the book. You thought this was going to be a break from politics. You're
totally
tired of politics, and you thought this was going to be the break. Originally, it started out as Tom Brady, right?
Well, here's the thing. There are print journalists here. You know print journalists. What happens is when you write like a big, long story, and I wrote a magazine piece on Tom Brady and then on Roger Goodell a year later, and I thought, oh, I've got all kinds of material, all these stuff that the editors took out of here. Like, I got half a book already. And then I realized that, you know what, I don't think this is that interesting, and I don't think anyone else will think it's that interesting. And I also think that Tom Brady is, you just mentioned Tom Brady and Patriots, you're going to lose maybe 85% of potential book buyers.
Yeah.
Everyone's nodding knowingly here. I mean, it's just true. It could be the best book ever, and you're just going to lose them no matter what. And that's fair, because I think most sports fans are parochial and everything. But I just decided that this was an interesting swamp, and this was the great spectacle of American life. And I decided also that I was sick of politics. The last campaign was rough. It just takes a lot out of you, as anyone who's been around that game can attest, especially now. And just football just struck me as not unlike Washington a few years ago, when it just seemed like it was so precarious and yet so prosperous, and everyone was feeling so good about itself or themselves, and the ratings were so high, and it just seemed like the gravy train was going to go on forever. But at the same time, you keep hearing about these existential issues, and I just saw this great disconnect between the level of contempt that people had for the National Football League while loving football and watching it in huge numbers, and just also wondering how long this was all going to continue for, because football has been this dynasty in American sports for four decades now, and it's just, I mean, who knows how long this can last. So
yeah.
It was just the great spectacle of American life. But then it merged with Trumpism, and there was no escape from politics.
Did you just throw up when that happened?
You know, it was sort of a gradual frog boiling kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know that frog boiling thing? I never quite got it, but it's not that uncomplicated.
No.
I remember actually I was at a Hillary Clinton event many years ago, and she was trying to do that frog boiling thing. It was the first time I heard it, and she just botched it. And it was like, you know, it's like that frog, and it's like the frog is in the water, and then the water gets warm, and the frog doesn't know. And I just completely, but I started hearing it a few times, so it made sense. Anyway, it was like that. So eventually politics was inescapable.
So one thing that occurred to me about the book, Mark, is that you caught the NFL on the crest of this wave when they were dealing with Deflategate, concussions, kneeling on the sideline, Donald Trump implicating them, that in a way, maybe not intentionally, but certainly importantly, you caught the NFL when it was really frog boiling.
Yeah, well, I think that's sort of the key. The big scam if you're writing a book is to make the whole world think that this is the you were the smart one to catch the moment at the right time, right?
You really did.
If none of this happened, I would have just made up something else that happened. Oh, well, because this cloud was over Candlestick Park on the day it closed, that's the whole story. No, but you're right, though. I mean, there were a lot of seemingly, you know, very, very big existential crises, many of them self-inflicted, in which, I mean, I guess what really struck my fancy on this was the Ray Rice situation, in which for a few days, remember it just seemed like after that TMZ video came out, it just didn't seem like the league had a clue.
Yeah.
Like, that's all anyone was talking about, certainly for that day, and for a couple days later, is Goodell going to survive? Like, where is this going? And you just have a sense of this thing that just seems so invincible laid so completely bare. And the same thing kind of happened last year when Trump started going after you know, the players who were protesting. And the league just didn't have a clue. And you had boycotts and you had people, you know, burning jerseys on YouTube and stuff. It was just one of these moments where you said, do they know where this is all going? And you do get a sense of how precarious it is.
So for those of us who are too cheap to buy the book, where is it all going?
Where is it all going?
Yeah, where is it? Are we headed for
flag
football?
I'm not telling you. You have to buy the book. No, we're not headed for flag football. I'm actually not one of these, like, Malcolm Gladwell. Like,
yeah.
Football will be dead in 20 years. No, I mean, look, I mean, here's... I mean, I could... In going out and talking about this book, I mean, everyone sort of wants me to be the doomsayer. The guy says, okay, football's dead, and it's... And then, like, I can go out, and, like, there was this event I did on a Thursday night in September. I think it was in Boston, actually. And
enough
I had this
already.
It could have been in Kansas City. It could have been anywhere. But yeah, I'm just placing you where I was. And I said, hey, thanks, everyone, for coming out and sacrificing the Cleveland Browns-New York Jets Thursday night game. Because, you know, I thought I had the classic, you know, wise-ass. Can you say wise-ass on this thing?
Yeah,
she did.
Oh,
she did.
Sorry, everyone. Really sorry. So I had this great opener, and then, like, everyone laughed because, you know, aren't we smug here? And then I go back to my hotel, and the second half, Baker Mayfield comes off the bench, and they come back at, you know, 21-point, you know, deficit. Great game. All anyone's talking about. I mean, Cleveland is like, it's like the highlight, certainly, of the season for Cleveland, given how it's all gone since then. And Cleveland, I mean, football just has a way of surprising, and just the reality show just continues to just present things. I mean, what was his name? Vontae Davis retires at halftime from the Buffalo Bills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like,
good luck, guys. I'm out.
Yeah. I mean, all anyone was talking about the next day.
Yeah.
So, anyway, look, I just think that it will survive despite itself and despite the people.
But survive in what form? There was a story around here a few weeks ago about an extraordinary number of high schools weren't fielding football teams because kids weren't signing
totally.
Up.
Well,
so,
and don't you think there's going to be an attrition at some point of mothers saying and fathers saying, "Yeah, you're not playing football."
Well, there already is.
Yeah, and at some point the
labor pool will be affected. No, that's clear.
But it's still a sport as boxing was decades ago, in which a young man from a poor background can rise up, take care of his family, take care of himself. There is not another sport quite like that.
That is a very good analogy. I agree. The difference, I would say, is this with football and boxing. Boxing, at its heyday, boxing was a city sport. It was a sport in which people from the inner city, whether they were black or Polish or Russian or Jewish or whatever, they could get out of the inner city and they could make something out of themselves. That was the success story. That was the origin story for so many boxers who became champions. When that went away, they had nowhere else to go.
Right.
Football, I think, will always have, even as maybe people in the cities start to push back against the popularity of it, because it's so ingrained in the culture of the South, I think it's always going to survive because it is such a part of the culture.
And the Midwest,
South.
Too.
And the Midwest, yes. But especially absolutely. The South.
Correct. But as a changed game, it's already changing just in this year alone.
It's
what
changing.
We've seen with what they're doing.
I
but
think
it,
the
yes.
SEC is basically a professional football league.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So
right.
I find it
Alabama
very...
Alabama would beat the Giants.
And,
yeah.
they, and the amount of money that is generated oh. for those universities, I just find it very hard to believe that they will willingly walk away from that. Maybe they will. I don't think they
when
will.
You think of all the West Texas high school football, I mean, it is so part of their lives.
It's part of the culture.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And by the way, the other thing is, look where boxing is now. I mean, boxing was number right. one in the, say, 40s and
right.
50s.
Sure.
It's now number, what, 5, 6, 7?
Maybe.
I mean, I don't
if
know.
That. Yeah.
If that, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
the other part of this is, you're absolutely right. I mean, think of, like, where Trump was popular. The Rust Belt.
Right.
Alabama.
South.
Texas.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That,
yeah.
the overlap between the sort of make America great again America that feels like an essential part of sort of, frankly, white male or sort of masculinity mm-hmm. is under siege, very much overlays with the part of the football culture that feels under siege by the political correct elites on the coasts or in the suburbs who don't have any use for football. So the sort of football exceptionalists you meet, often a lot of coaches, you know, often are Trump people. I mean, that's yeah. sort of the demographic overlap.
Did you run into them as you were writing this book? You got into the race stuff a lot. I think you said
fair amount.
It was only a matter of time before Trump-style politics crashed into the NFL Coliseum.
I think
in this
so.
Case, the gladiators were Trump and Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other part of this, which is purely personal on Trump's part, is that he's wanted into this club for 4 decades.
Correct.
I mean,
yeah.
he is like, this is a perfect sort of personal spurning, or like it's part of his
right.
Wannabe narrative, right? Like he yeah. wanted to be part of this club, and they wouldn't right.
and
have.
They,
him.
But they didn't. They made a very public gesture of not including.
Well,
him.
Yeah.
Was he a USF owner? Was he on the general?
He was,
yeah. and he won it in the NFL.
Yeah, and they said
please.
But right. didn't they do real due some, diligence on his finances?
Some
and
people
said,
blamed him for taking down the USF.
Well, yeah.
absolutely. No, I think a lot, and I think rightly because he was his insistence that moved it to the fall. Mm-hmm. I mean, he overpaid for Herschel Walker and
right.
Doug Flutie and
that's right.
whoever
that's
else.
Right.
So, I don't. You know, they did as much due diligence as possible to know that they wanted absolutely nothing to do with him. Either, I mean, he didn't reveal his books to them to the degree that which certainly
right.
they probably know more than the U.S.
Treasury
electorate
knows.
Than
us taxpayers.
Yeah. So there is that. Bob Mueller probably knows a little more at this
right.
point. No, most of them have like dealt with him over the years.
Right.
It's sort of this famous club, and
yeah.
they don't want to be a business partner of his. And
mm-hmm.
I think most serious business people wouldn't.
Yeah, absolutely. But they talk a little bit about the Colin Kaepernick thing, because it really, again, it goes to, I think, the insular world of the owners, the
yeah.
345 Park Avenue, the NFL. They really don't have a clue as to what's going on in the world. And we talk about that a lot here on Tony's show.
Mm-hmm.
We live in D.C., you live in L.A., you live in New York,
yeah.
the SLA crowd. We really don't know. But that is a particularly insular world.
Well, so there was this And last October, about a year ago, the NFL or Roger Goodell convened a meeting between about a dozen owners and a dozen players right after the Kaepernick, right after the Trump weighed in on the Trap Kaepernick
right.
Thing. And they're like, what do we do? And Goodell sort of says, look, I want to trust each other. Can we just keep the contents of this confidential? And someone who was in the meeting was nice enough to tape the meeting and share it with Ken Belson and I, my colleague. So we got to hear what they were saying, which is really annoying, and I hope I wasn't too disloyal to the league, but I did it. So anyway, we wrote a story about it. It's a lot of it's in the book. But what you get a sense of is these largely very, very old, short-sighted, and scared owners just saying, look, can we just make this kneeling go away so Donald doesn't tweet about
right.
us? I mean,
mm-hmm.
Terry Pegula, the owner of the Bills, was like the most, he was the scaredest of all.
Mm-hmm.
He was just saying, look, we just need to get out of here. We need to, like, we have to stop. We need, like, a black version of Charlton Heston to be our spokesperson, because that was so successful for the NRA, even though he was white. And I was like
yeah.
what are you talking about? I was listening to this, and Ken and I were listening, and it was like, what is going on here? But it did give me a window into,
wow.
and also,
who's
like,
yeah.
who is dead? He's been dead for 10
years
or at least.
But
it does give you a window into,
awesome.
Like, these are really smaller than life characters. And because the ownership of the league is set up very much like, say, the Senate, where, like, everyone's got their own fiefdom,
mm-hmm.
and the commissioner, who's the Senate majority leader, who has to just
right.
make them happy. you just don't have a sense of any real leadership or forward-looking leadership here, and it certainly doesn't come from the commissioner either.
Yeah, their fear of taking on or getting into a fight with Donald Trump publicly is just palpable in your stories. Yeah. Absolutely palpable.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on one second. I have to send something down the table.
Uh-oh.
Because we're going to have to wrap up with Mark here pretty soon.
More aid.
And
yes.
Seriously, Mark, GD and I were talking beforehand.
What do you got?
There are 9 million things we could talk about from your book.
Yes.
And it is Big Game, NFL in Dangerous Times. People really should get it. It's a great holiday gift, I think, as we come up on the holidays.
Yes.
But I'm going to send something down.
It's great. Anytime.
It's very heavy, David.
It's heavy.
And I'm going to get you to tell a story.
Oh, my gosh.
One of my favorite things when
I'm
people
write. I'm having PTSD right
and a
now.
Cowboys Cup.
This is an amazing thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. You're actually giving me
a bottle of Johnny
Walker Blue.
But you have to
tell a story.
You have to tell the story from the book.
This is okay, I just want to, like, describe for people who can't see this.
Which would be
Which would be everyone except for the half dozen people who are sitting around the table. Tori has perfectly replicated a scene from the book. The chapter is called "This Man's Liver Belongs in Canton." This is not me. This is Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. I interviewed him. He had me down. Gerald had me down to Dallas. We did an interview on the Dallas Cowboys bus. A visit.
A visit.
Very good. Yes. Everything.
Good, Jeannie.
For people of a certain age, everything is a visit, especially in the South. Anyway, he asked me about half hour in. He said, "You want a shot of scotch?" And I figured, sure, I'm here in Texas at a golf club on the Dallas Cup. Of course I want a shot of scotch. And by shot of scotch, he meant a souvenir cup with a Dallas Cowboys logo on it.
Sure.
Far bigger than this, by the way.
Bigger than a Solo cup, which is a good frame of reference for most people.
What do you think? It's like 12 ounces in here?
No, that's 22, my friend.
Is that 22?
Is it 22?
It's 22.
It was bigger than this.
Wow.
Now,
I think you said 24 ounces.
I might have. Wow. I may be caught in an error here. It was a big old cup. It was clear.
Clear is worse.
So anyway, so this was filled to the rim, this shot.
Oh, my God.
And Jerry Jones is a heavyweight drinker, and he's well into his 70s. I mean, his liver legitimately does belong in Canton, Ohio. I am I would say, light to middleweight drinker, and I am certainly not equipped to drink
large tumbler of whiskey.
I will say, Johnny Walker Blue is the secretariat of the Johnny Walker.
It's the official drink of the Tony Kornheiser program.
Yes.
Is it? Well, as it should be. Anyway, butler or whoever it was, I guess he drove the bus also, just kept refilling it.
Jeez.
And I will say this, the interview was great. I mean, it tasted so good. I felt so good. It tasted so good. The interview was one of the best interviews I've done, and I don't remember a thing about it, but the tape recorder was working perfectly.
That's all that matters.
And I took a nap at the end on the bus. And
nap. Didn't they leave you there for a while?
It was, as they should, because I was in no condition to get behind the wheel in my rental car and go to my little airport hotel. And so, it was a great interview, and I am now getting, like, chills just looking at this, and I never want to see this again.
Yeah.
But it's great. I'm going to, like, do you guys want some?
No, thank you. No, thank you.
That's all you.
That's all you.
So it is Mark Leibovich. It is Big Game, the NFL in Dangerous Times, a very timely book. Mark, thank you very, very much for being with us.
Total pleasure, guys.
Come back again.
I would love to. Anytime.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Wait.
We got to do one quick wrap-up with the gang here, which is you get to recommend one book. One book that people should read if they haven't read it. David?
I read it. I started reading it again over the weekend because I wanted to make sure it was as good as I thought it was the first time, and I think it is. It's Common Ground by Anthony Lucas, which is an amazing look at the desegregation era in Boston in the early 70s.
Boston again.
It's phenomenal for the perspective not only of the Southie families, but also the African-American families that have to go into those places that they weren't necessarily designed to go into. And it's just it's a real kind of 360 look at the entirety. It also talks about the judge who issued the orders and that history. And it's a wonderfully written book about how, again, and I'm fascinated by how people actually get along with one another or don't get along with one another.
Right.
And this is about how a group of people, through circumstance, who have never been around each other, have to suddenly be around each other.
Excellent. Jamie?
Okay, so, we think as human beings that we're logical and people and we make reasonable decisions.
Not around here we don't. Go ahead.
But my favorite book, and I reread this book over again, it's called The Art of Thinking Clearly. It's by a guy named Ralph Dobelli. It's a lot of short chapters, and each one examines a cognitive bias that we all have about why we make dumb decisions that are illogical. And it's a real eye-opener. It's a lot of fun. It's like each chapter is only like 3 or 4 pages long, and it explains something. And you read it, and you think, oh my gosh, I'm not nearly as smart as I thought I was. Art of Thinking Clearly, Ralph DeBelli. If you read one book this year,
Read that one too. We're going to track this on Amazon, see if book sales go up. Jeannie?
I am a great fan of William Trevor, an Irish slash English.
Of course you are.
Of course. I know it's stereotypical. And he's a great short story writer and is known mostly for his short stories. But this summer I was casting about for something charming, and I came upon Love in Summer by William Trevor. Trevor has said that when he gets stuck on a short story, he goes and writes a novel. Because it's so much easier for him to write a novel than a short story.
Awesome.
And Love in Summer, it sounds, I know, like sort of like a Hallmark TV story, but it has all the Trevor tropes. You know, there's conflict, there's tension, but there's love. When you first start to read it, you think, oh, gee, I really want to go live in an Irish cottage and have chickens in the backyard. But anyway, it goes off. He can be very dark, as people who've read Felicia's Journey, another of his novels, will know.
This is sounding very book clubby.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay.
I'm sorry to just be bookish here. It's not like me. But anyway.
You're not going to start cross-country skiing, are you, Jane?
It is a short novel that is actually very charming and exuberant. In the end.
Excellent.
I recommend it.
Mark Stern?
Highly.
Other than Big Game, the NFL in Dangerous Times.
Yeah, there you go. Simon the Cat.
Soon to be released, hopefully this week, Simon the Sea Cat. A book I read in high school. I'm a big history guy. This actually won the Pulitzer in 75. It's called The Killer Angels by Michael Schara, the late, great Michael Schara.
I read that. It's great.
Yeah, it's a historical novel about the Battle of Gettysburg. And it takes the persona of a lot of the key players. And a lot of people that you did not know of before reading this, and it's just brilliantly done. His son has actually carried on in the tradition and the style of that, writing about World War II and the First World War, the Revolutionary War, and it's a great way. I mean, I'm a history guy. People don't know enough about history, and they need to. And this is very readable, and it's very important. And by the way, we live in an area where after you read it, you're like, I want to know more about it. You could drive up to Gettysburg.
70 minutes from
here. So, Corey, you should know about this book because it's required reading at the Army War College.
We could do a whole show.
And they go up and walk the whole route.
You could do a whole show on the required reading that the Army War College has, that the Marines have. The Commandant of the Marine Corps always has a required reading list. It's fascinating. Mark, I didn't ask you to prepare for this, but do you have a recommended book? Besides your own. Big Game, NFL in Dangerous Times. We're up to 10 now.
God, I feel like so relatively unerudite. I mean, I have to say, I mean, I'm late to this, but there's a book called America's Game by Michael McCambridge, which is the great and definitive history of football. And I don't usually like these like long books. It's about 500-600 pages. I couldn't put it down. And like, it's just filled with things that like I've been, if I went to cocktail parties, I'd be sharing things like, by the way, the Los Angeles Rams Ram helmet.
Right.
Was considered by Andy Warhol to be the great pop art application onto the professional sports of any team symbol. Ever since then, I've watched the Los Angeles Rams differently. The book is filled with this, but actually, it's just a great book.
What's it called again?
America's Game by Michael McCambridge.
Yes.
Fabulous book.
I always like the Cleveland Browns helmet. I thought that was
just brown.
Just brown. Kind of says it.
It's a great, really great design. Minimalist, but it's really powerful.
I would say a book called Beartown. Some people have heard about a book called A Man Called Uwe, which is a wonderful story, which Tom Hanks is making the movie soon, this and that. But Beartown, which is by the Swede, Frederick Backson or something like that, is ostensibly about this small town in Canada, and it's about hockey, about kids' hockey teams. But it really is about, to your point, David, relationships, It's just absolutely remarkable. And you start reading it, and you cannot put it down.
Hmm.
Okay. But this we have to put down. Correct, Mike? Beartown.
Yes.
But we got to put this down. This has been great.
It's been
fun. Thank you all for joining us.
I think we're going to have another show.
Jeannie, Jamie, David, Mark.
Yes.
Mark.
Why can't we just have one of these shows where there's like people are so having so much fun they just keep talking?
Exactly.
We should just do it.
And drinking. Come back in 2 hours.
Of course, I guess people have to listen to this
tonight because Gary Williams is coming in soon, so we have to go. But we want to thank everybody for being here. We want to thank the staff of Chatter for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Come back next week, same time, when we have SL Price of Sports Illustrated. Mark, love you. Thank you, honey. We're out.
Thank you.